Welcome to the Grenhill Chronicles podcast. My name is Don Bishop, and I write as T.S. Pedramon. And today I have author Stephanie Jackson on the podcast with me, who writes Kidlit. She also writes poems, articles, ranging from picture books and mid-grade novels. But we're actually going to do kind of a different thing today. And although I do plan to have Stephanie on at a future date to talk about her work, today we're actually going to turn the table and turn the map around, and she's going to interview me. She had some questions while we were emailing and talking about interviewing her at some future time, and she had some questions come up, and I'm like, well, how about we just talk it through?
Sounds good.
Stephanie, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Let listeners get to know you, like your background.
Yeah. So I'll read my bio real quick, and then I can, if anything sounds interesting, I can elaborate. I'm a nature-loving creative. I write poems, articles, picture books, and middle-grade novels. I actually am working on some YA as well. My nonfiction has been published in Cricut Magazine, which I grew up reading, so that was like a dream come true. And my poems have been published in various literary journals, including Touchstones, Tiny Seed Journal, and I've been a contributing poetry editor for Touchstones. Professional affiliations include the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, the Authors Guild, the American Night Writers Association, the Women's Fiction Writers Association, and I expect to graduate from Utah Valley University in spring 2025 with my undergraduate English degree, emphasis in creative writing. I am currently blogging for stemtuesday.com. That's a new thing. I get to do my first post next month. So yeah, I have four kids, and this has just been a crazy 10 years since I started writing for children.
Cool. Well, thank you. Yeah. And some of that brings back memories. So I went to BYU, but my wife did take some classes at UVU. And so I've been there on campus.
Yeah, they're both great schools.
And pick her up and went to a couple of concerts.
That's fun.
But yeah. And yeah, that's really cool. I'm not familiar with Cricut Magazine, but if you grew up reading it, to find your own compositions in it, that's really cool.
Yeah. I think right now they have about 70,000 print subscribers, so that felt really good. That was my first nice paid piece that I was like, I got hundreds of dollars, babe, hundreds. Like, I'm paid author now. So that's always fun.
Yeah, and as much as you can't buy anything with exposure bucks, exposure does count for something.
Sure does.
And so like get your name in front of 70,000 people. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So what got you into writing? Have you always been a writer, Don?
Kind of. I've always been an imaginer, and I've always kind of had that aspiration to write something. And it really took the last 12 years to turn it into something serious. It started kind of with NaNoWriMo. Do you know NaNoWriMo?
Yes, I haven't done it, but I have friends who do it. That's pretty intense. I think it's several thousand words a day, like what, 5,000?
I think you could make it with 3,000. I don't remember the math right now. Maybe even 1,600?
1,600 I could maybe do, but life has just been too crazy up to this point, but I'd love to do it in the future.
Yeah. Well, I attempted it twice. I've never won it.
Yeah.
But the second time that I attempted it, and if I have any long-term listeners of the podcast, they've heard the story before, but the second time that I attempted, I thought I had a really cool idea, so I didn't want to let it die with that month,
sure,
you know, with the month of November. And so it stewed and brewed for several years, and it's still stewing and brewing.
I have lots of ideas that are on the back burner. It's just a reality of being a creative. And no worries, I'm sure when the time comes up, you'll have it in your back pocket at the right moment.
Yep, that's kind of the plan. So I ultimately realized that I needed to set it aside because I was too embroiled in the weeds, So if I wanted to put something out to market, I needed to start over and do something else.
Usually you don't sell your first book. That's just kind of how it is in publishing. I mean, even if you self-publish, it usually takes writing a book to make you a writer. And then, you know, you kind of cut your teeth on that first one. And sometimes you end up polishing it and selling it later. I mean, so it's totally on point what you're going through. What exactly do you write? Are you inside of a genre, or are you kind of defining your own genre? Are you like, what age group? I kind of got the idea that you're doing like a fantasy sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But is it like YA or for adults, or?
So the easy, quick answer is YA epic fantasy.
Okay.
The more, you know, open it up and unpackage it. I've actually been kind of surprised how the fact of the way how markets work and how familiarity works, you kind of need to silo yourself into a genre.
Agree.
Whereas, yeah, you know, I hadn't thought about that before. When I decided, yeah, I'm serious, I'm going to be a writer, I had lots of ideas. I still have ideas across multiple genres.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's impossible to write in different genres, but you do need to focus so that you have a body of work so that a reader coming and getting to know your book has the opportunity to get to know more than one book. You know, you need to build a nexus,
right,
in that genre. And so if you're going to do that again in another genre, absolutely, go ahead. But the question is, do you have time?
Right.
You know, some people don't. I don't have time right now. But I'll try to get there.
Yeah. So your passion is kind of this fantasy that you've got going on, this epic fantasy. How long are epic fantasy? Are you in the 90,000 to 100,000 range with your word count?
Book one is 94,000 words.
Hey, which is pretty good.
Short.
Yeah.
On the side of, you know, where I came from, and I was reading Wheel of Time in high school.
Yeah.
And, you know, those books range from 400 pages up.
Right.
Or is it? Yeah. I think the first one is about 400, maybe it's 600, but they're long books. So mine being 94,000, that's, for reference, Harry Potter one is 80,000 words.
Yeah.
Book two is going to be longer than book one.
Yeah.
I know that. I'm not done with it yet, so I'm not sure how long it'll be, but I'm doing more, I'm doing multiple points of view.
Okay, I like that.
Book one, yeah, I have to. And it's not that an epic fantasy necessarily has to, but if you have characters splitting up and going different ways and then coming back together later, it really lends itself to that.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That makes sense. So what would you consider your comp titles or like your mentor texts? Like people who have read, you know, fans of, would enjoy your books.
Well, I guess I have noticed that my most vocal fans among the, you know, these are people that I know that I knew before I wrote the book, but the most vocal fans have been readers of Harry Potter,
mm-hmm.
Even Percy Jackson. I've never read Percy Jackson, but I did read Harry Potter. But you asked like reference or did you say trainer?
Mentor, like what? Mentor texts.
Mentor. Yeah. Okay. So I read Harry Potter. I read Wheel of Time. I mentioned I've read, not extensively, but I've read, Anne McCaffrey, the Dragon Riders of Pern series.
Oh, cool.
Or, Nexus. And, I also read Anne McCaffrey's Pegasus series. I don't know if I read them all, but, or Pegasus in Flight is the name of the first book. It's the talent. People with telepathy and telekinesis.
Neat.
With those abilities in a It starts out in present day or near future. Yeah, near future science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And what else has trained me? I mean, there's Brandon Sanderson, which I didn't read growing up because he hadn't published yet when I was growing up.
Sure.
But I've listened to a lot of his audiobooks. I started that in 2014 when I had a long commute. And so I got an Audible subscription so I wouldn't be so bored on the way back, on the way to and from work.
That's the only benefit of the long commute, right? You get to listen to books.
Yeah. And I really started thinking about like what makes stories good and what works well and what doesn't really work well. I listened to the 3D Body Problem and The Dark Forest, the sequel, and also Red Rising 1, 2, and 3. And Red Rising is has a lot of language, and it's very forceful. Like, I wouldn't watch the movie, but it was very interesting to me coming up as a Marine NCO at the time. NCO is non-commissioned officer.
Okay.
It's kind of a middle to lower leadership. And just looking at how the Marine Corps, how the philosophy works and how they view things and how they really, what grabs the military mind, what grabs their attention is somebody who behaves more forcefully.
Yeah.
Whereas that's not how I grew up. You know, you learn the meek shall inherit the earth, and I think there is merit there, but I'm downplaying it, of course. It is essential.
My dad was a Marine. I gotcha. Semper Fi, right?
Yeah.
So,
but the attitude is that they want you to be bold and outspoken, and you have to advocate for yourself, which I didn't really grow up trained to do, to advocate for myself.
Sure.
I would, if I wanted an opportunity, I would look for somebody soliciting applications, you know, and you go and apply. But the Red Rising mentality and what I was trying to glean from that was that you're putting yourself in a box when you do that.
Mm.
And this is not, in my view, this is not at odds with being meek and humble, like the Savior taught,
mm-hmm.
Because you're not closing your mind to being teachable and learning and listening to others, but you are, as the Marines like to say, you have a bias for action.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You're not going to sit around and weigh the options forever. You're going to quickly assess the situation and take action. And so with Red Rising, I really tried to pull that mentality. Like, I'm going to go and do this thing, and I'm not going to ask myself whether other people are going to think it's okay. And I still do. It's it's pretty ingrained in my brain. Maybe I was born with it. I do worry about what other people are going to think, but I have learned to take I'm way off topic. I'm rambling, but I've learned to take conscious decisions and say, you know what? I'm not going to worry about that. And if that is going to be an issue, they're going to bring it up, and then I can explain what's going on and how I'm seeing things.
Sure.
And it's not that I'm trying to be oppositional or contrary. It's just, I'm going to do what needs to be done. And if somebody tries to stop me, well, okay, let's talk about it. And maybe then I'll find out that I do need to change what I'm doing. But if I just sit here and worry about it, I'm not even going to find out whether or not it's okay.
Right.
So might as well get up and go and try to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. I think a lot of people these days are struggling with, if not depression, just, I don't know, post-pandemic attitudes of like, oh, do I really have to? And writing is one of those things. Jane Yolen talked about her best technique is called button chair. You sit down mm-hmm. and you don't leave until you've written. So it's a little bit like that Marine mentality. So why did you decide to self-publish? What it sounded like you said that your wife, Layla, kind of sort of pushed you to do that. What was her thought process or what were you guys thinking?
Well, it's not really that she pushed me to self-publish. It's that she encouraged me 12 years ago, technically 11 and a half plus another month or two. When I did that NaNoWriMo attempt, and then later I held on to this idea and she was encouraging. And so over the years, I kept coming back to that, and it really kind of stewed in my mind, and I'd have fits and starts where I would write more, and ultimately my active duty time was seeming less like it was something that we wanted to keep with and continue with, and so
yeah, that can be hard on a family.
Yeah. And wanting something different, like, well, okay, let's take these stories and write them and see where it goes. But as far as self-publishing, I don't know. Now I want to ask my wife if she would have encouraged me to query, like to get an agent and submit to publishers. It was just kind of, I was learning things online and I was joining these writers groups and learning how there are people out there earning a living.
Yeah.
As independent.
Hey, there's, independent I'm all about self-publishing. I'm not one to slam it. I have a lot of friends who are self-publishing and who are very, just successful with it. I think self-publishing is great. Definitely wasn't meant to be a judgment of any kind. I think there are a lot of benefits to self-publishing. I mean, I've been in the querying trenches for almost 2 years and I've had some close calls with literary agents. I've talked to editors who wanted to take my manuscript on, but they simply couldn't handle any more manuscripts because they had too many in my genre that they were already working on. So yeah, I mean, there are lots of great reasons to self-publish and I half consider it sometimes. But it's always been my dream to be traditionally published. So I'm going to keep going with that for a while and see where it leads me. I think it's great what you're doing.
I've got this, this Red Rising mentality. Like I'm holding on to that.
Right.
For anybody who hasn't listened to previous episodes where I told the premise, in Red Rising, it's, I don't know, 700 to 1,000 years in the future, humanity is spread across the solar system and society has been stratified, into different classes. There's a ruling class, there are clerics and all these different skilled laborers. And the lowest slaves are reds. So it's trying to they are encoded by eye color.
Interesting.
And oftentimes hair color as well, although that's not completely across the board, but eye color. So that these reds and low reds are miners mining helium-3 under the surface of Mars, and that's the main character. He's born a low red, descendant of Irish stock. So his red hair is actually natural. His minor spoiler, it's in the beginning of the book. his wife is killed, and he gets upset about that. And in this, in these mines, they don't allow, when somebody is sentenced to death, they hang them. And it's Mars. The gravity isn't as strong, so it doesn't kill people as fast.
Oh, right. I think you told me about this.
Oh, did I?
Maybe. Email. And so they had to, like, make him kill her or something.
So they're not allowed to pull the feet of their loved ones as mercy, you know, to kill them faster.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, here's my loved one who is suffering, dangling from a rope, and I'm going to end the suffering by pulling their feet down.
Right.
And that's not allowed. Right. He doesn't. Because everybody's there. Everybody's watching. It's also not allowed to cut them down and bury them. And he comes back and he cuts her down and buries her. So he gets sentenced as well. And he gets hanged. But there is a resistance. And somebody in the resistance gives him a drug beforehand. He doesn't realize it. So he gets hanged and he goes unconscious. And they cut him down and bury him. And then he wakes up and pulls himself out of the dirt. Nobody's around. And somebody shows up and pulls him out of the mines. And he learns that his life has been a lie. Like, he thinks all the low reds believe, because they've been told, that they are there mining helium-3, which is rocket fuel, so that humanity can, and it's also part of the process of terraforming Mars. So they're there terraforming Mars so that humanity can come and live on Mars. They pull him out of the mines, and the terraforming of Mars was finished hundreds of years ago.
Oh, wow.
And
what a beginning.
They've just been lied to so that they feel like their mining is inspiring, but no, they're just driving business.
So tell me about the pacing of this novel. So, is this kind of like the thing that sets him on his emotional arc, on his journey, on his hero? Is it a hero's journey type plot?
I'm not well versed in the criteria of what qualifies as the hero journey, so I don't know.
Okay, but it'd be similar to a Star Wars or a Harry Potter, or, you know, there's certain beats. If you study screenwriting, but
maybe
anyway.
So what happens is that he gets pulled into this secret resistance, and again, society is stratified by eye color, right? He's a red.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are coppers and bronze and silvers and whites and grays and pinks and blues and greens. And at the top you have the golds. And so they take him. And he's a miner used to driving these complex machinery drills. And like, okay, you're fast. We've seen your reaction times. You're super fast. You're super smart. You could intellectually probably pass as a gold, but all of that doesn't. You're like, I don't remember how tall he is. Let's say you're 5'2", you know, and you need to be like 7 feet tall. So they put him through all these surgeries, and they put him through all these classes to teach him about gold society, and they plug him into, because he's still young, they plug him into a school for the golds to learn how to rule brutally. Like, they pull a lot of their culture from the ancient Greeks and Romans. And so he is kind of sent on this mission to pass this school so that he can then go on to become a commander of a large fleet and help in some resistance. But he's like, no, I need to win the school. I need to like become an imperator, become a commander of a large fleet, like right away. We'll end this madness much faster than the resistance is thinking. He kind of gives it a direction of his own. He takes things in his own hands to make things better. And like I said, it's graphic and there's a lot of language, but the I needed a dose of that. And we're way off topic. But I needed a dose of this in my mind to take things more into my hands rather than just doing what I'm told I can do. And I'm not advocating like going and I'm not saying like go and build a machine gun in your basement because the government says you can't. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying like there's the traditional route of publishing, like get an agent, submit your manuscript to publishers, and then submit it to more publishers, and submit it to more publishers, and just wait while they say no and no and no and no. Maybe one of them will say yes eventually. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. So I'm going to publish, and I don't care if somebody doesn't have time to read my manuscript in order to put it at the top of their slush pile and then say no later. No, I'm just going to bypass all that. And I'm going to go and do it myself.
Yeah. So are you looking to publish other writers, or are you keeping your press like just with your own novels?
There are two answers to that.
Okay.
So ideologically, yes, sure. Absolutely. Practically, it's a big enough challenge just doing my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were to take on other writers, then, well, somebody's got to read their manuscripts and somebody's got to go through the process of coordinating editors and artists. And so, like, I'm not opposed to that.
Sure.
But I'm just trying to put out, my own books and have some success. So someday, maybe.
Yeah.
It could be like you asked, you mentioned in emails that you saw that I'd started a company.
Yeah.
And technically my wife started, we put it in her name, because there are, I don't know if this will ever be relevant in our case, but there are some incentives for
female owned businesses.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Now I wonder if there are better things in place for veteran owned. So maybe we should put it under my name. I don't know. Doesn't really matter.
That's a good question.
Whatever. Whatever.
Let's see. I don't know. What's your favorite thing that you've written that you haven't published yet? Can you give us some kind of, not spoilers, but hints, some pitches or some, I don't know, something.
I'm opening up my file manager and I'm digging through things. It's kind of, I have ideas that I like and, well.
I mean, does it start for you with a character? Or does it start with the setting, or where do you get your ideas?
I kind of go for concepts.
Okay.
And so like my current series, Nightshade Unicorn, started out with the concept of, you know, I needed to set my main thing aside that I've been working on for a decade and do something new. Okay. Something with more obvious magic than that one. Cause I want to make sure I'm sending a clear message. It's definitely fantasy. Unicorns, those are well known, but how can I make it different and distinct? Some kind of dark unicorn. He's very serious. Maybe all the other unicorns are light and airy minded, but this one, maybe he's angry. Maybe he's evil. I don't know. So it kind of developed based off of that. And like, well, if we change this, what does that mean for that? And then, so that's like the concept of the situation.
Yeah, the
and
premise.
Then the other one, the premise. Then the Grand Hill Chronicles, which is the series that I set aside, is there's a kingdom where the the king and queen have children that are born and weapons materialize in their hands so they can grow up and be able to defend the kingdom one day.
Mm-hmm.
And then the weapons are immediately yanked away and hidden on another world until they're old enough to wield them. And so that was actually a dream I had in October of 2010. So the next month I'm like, that's my story. So it's the premise. And then I have a short story called Back Magic.
That sounds interesting. Somebody,
and I shared it with my newsletter list, but it's urban fantasy, right? And he and his friend, they kind of dabble in different magics and they'll study this and study that. And his friend is always sharing like, oh, here's this spell of water magic that you can do this. And then they hear about this, this back magic. And I don't know. So his friend is more into the magic and the main character is more into like swords.
Yeah.
He likes swords. But his friend is dragging him along like, hey, let's go to this convention. We'll go to this. I heard of this thing at this old library. We're going to find out this lost back magic. And the guy's like, why? That sounds dumb, you know. And then there's, broken homes. The thing there is imagine a house where you walk in the front door. And you go upstairs and you look out the window. And you see a completely different scenery. And then the next day you see a completely different scenery again because the house is dimensionally broken. And so like the upper story exterior travels from place to place every day.
Hmm.
And whereas the foundation stays, well, I need to think out like, I think if you stand outside and look at the house, you still see the upper story, or don't you? I don't remember. I have not finished that short story.
Yeah.
But it's the concept, and I could give several more examples, but no, it's the premise for me.
Well, I have to ask, is there any element of romance in your books? Romanticy's having a really hot moment. Everybody's enjoying romanticy. So is there any romance at all in your novels?
There is some.
Okay.
I do write clean, so you throw out, I don't know.
It's no spice, but
yeah, no spice.
Yeah.
It's just these days there's people are so many people have no shame.
It's true. I wasn't asking about the spice level. I was just like, yeah, is there a love interest? There is. Is there, you know, flirting?
Yeah.
Okay.
And in Nightshade Unicorn book one, it's not a huge element in the book. But the love interest will come back.
Sure.
And I have plans. So yes, there will be romance.
Epic fantasy with a side of romance.
Yeah, because it happens. And that's what I was raised on. There's the Wheel of Time. Right.
I haven't read those ones and I know I need to. Everybody talks about them. All my writer friends.
Yeah.
So if you could have the ideal writer experience, like the best career, do you want to do school visits? Like what is your goal? Is it mostly making money? Is it getting your stories out there? I mean, you can have more than one answer, but like, what is your goal?
I wish I had a manager. And maybe one day I will. I did 12 years active duty in the Marine Corps. And during that time, we had things happen, family things. And we never finished moving into a place and we've been in this house for a year and a half and we are far from finished moving in. And anyway, so one of these days, maybe perhaps Lila will help with the things that are more difficult for me. I am not very organizationally minded. I'm scatterbrained, and so I made this weekly schedule for myself. I made this weekly schedule for myself, and it was supposed to be like, this is how I'm gonna do the work and get things done all the time on the regular. But I can't do this schedule because our lives are still in a great state of upheaval.
Yeah.
So if I had somebody, I would give them a direction and then they would go and they would contact bookstores and schools and set up the appointments. I'll gladly go.
Yeah.
And talk about the book, you know, but it's the administrative stuff that I ideally could push off to somebody else.
Sure.
That may not be the answer you were looking for. So
that's okay. I just meant, you know, where do you see this going? You know, for me, I definitely would love to do school visits. That's my dream because the kids are the best. The adults are the gatekeepers, and I don't, you know, adults are fine, but I prefer working with kids because they're just so full of wonder and, you know, they're just so much more fun to talk to. They're so sweet. My daughter is 12 and she said to my husband the other day that she and I were having an author to author chat. And I was like, oh, that's so cute. She calls herself an author and she's not even finished writing her first book. You know, she's working on a dystopian novel at, you know, age 12. And it's just so cute. Right? Kids are awesome. I love kids. So, you know, for me, school visits is where it's at. But everybody has their own, like, I will feel like an author when X happens, right?
I had a youth leader who said that grown-ups are boring because they've stopped dreaming.
Yes.
And there's certainly an element of that. Now, I'm a daydreamer for sure. I cannot stop daydreaming. But I do feel that the factor of like being an adult, and now I'm 40 years old. It's not that I stopped dreaming, but I'm starting to realize like that'll never happen because life isn't long enough.
Yeah.
And I there are only so many different things I can do.
Yeah. I'm feeling the pinch on my time for sure.
Another thing being an adult is that we know how financially difficult things can be. Like, oh yeah, sure, we could hypothetically do that thing if we sold all our stuff and we sold the house and lived out of a van, then we could go and do that really fun, expensive thing. But then after that, what?
Right.
After that, what do we do? Because we spent all our money, we don't have anything.
I know, my kids, their favorite movie is Yes Day. We just watched it. And I'm like, have you seen it?
No,
oh, it's a day where the parents have to say yes to everything the kids ask for. So, of course, I mean, that's the child fantasy, right? But at the end of the day, you still have to pay your bills. You still have to do all that stuff. So, I don't know. It's a pretty funny movie. It's on Netflix and whatnot. But it like you said, you know, as the adult, you still have to think about those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know what else to ask you. Do you feel like this is, do you have any mission at the heart of what you're doing? Like, or is it more of a passion, or is it just like, I feel like I'm good at this, I should pursue it?
Well, I feel like I'm good with words and understanding how sentences work.
Yeah.
Which actually is not essential for being a writer.
True.
Because editing is a thing, and that's, you can, if you have a compelling story concept and you write characters in a manner that pulls the attention along, then somebody else can edit your spelling and punctuation and your grammar.
Yeah.
And
it's true. You sound like you've read Story Genius by Lisa Krohn. Have you read that one?
No, I don't read craft books.
Oh,
I'm not opposed to them. I just, I, I don't.
Well, her thing is very much about that. It's about finding the motivation for your character, and you build the emotional arc. And then after you figure that out, you figure out, you know, what their misbelief is, like at the beginning of the novel, and then maybe like what they learn at the end, and then how you ask yourself the question, what plot would get me there? And you build the plot on top of the emotional arc. And that's because it's much harder to rewrite the emotional arc of a book than it is to rewrite the plot. So you do that first. Yeah. And anyway.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It just sounds very much like what you're talking about.
I realize that I'm doing that. I have the emotional arc in my mind for the whole series.
Yeah.
Which is almost the same thing as the main character's emotional arc. And then there are emotional arcs for the major characters.
Okay.
And
so can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So when you said it's multiple POV, I was just wondering if it's multiple POV within one book, or if it's each book in the series is a different POV point of view.
Within one book.
Okay. So how many characters do we have? How many main characters?
I read the Animorphs series.
Okay, yeah, me too.
I don't
too.
Know if you read those.
I did.
But those are one POV per book.
Yes.
And it cycles through.
Yeah.
Cycles through again and again. Long series. Book one is almost only one POV.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way the story runs and it's presented. So in book one, you have the prologue from the POV of somebody named Tylonus. And then you have chapter 1 through chapter 31 in the POV of the main character. And then the epilogue, we're back to Tylonus. So book one is almost only one POV. Book two is, I don't know how many POVs it's going to have, because I'm not done with it yet. And, it could be six.
Yeah. The middle grade novel I'm working on is a single POV, but our next one is going to be the best friend point of view. And so it's kind of fun because we're kind of planning like a series where each book will be a different point of view in there within their group. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how many we'll get through, but we've plotted the second one. So,
yeah, it's kind of like you have. So I have the main character, and in book one, she's just going through the story, but we encounter other characters, and they're physically separated from her, but they're going to come back, and we're going to want to know what they've been doing in the meanwhile. So I need to POV them, you know?
Got it. I've never heard that used as a verb. That was interesting. Going to POV them. I like it. Do you write mostly in first person or third person, or what do you,
mostly in third.
Yeah. Okay.
I've played a little bit with first person. Back Magic might've been in first person. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I started rewriting Grenhill Chronicles in first person, but I'm going to keep it in third after all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mostly in third person.
Very good. I think my first novel's in third person, but it's third person limited, so it's really a psychial intensity that feels a lot like first person. But I've been playing around with second person lately because it's super fun. And so my YA book that I'm working on might be second person. That's how I've been writing it.
That's interesting. That's I don't think I've ever read a book in second person except for Choose Your Own Adventure books.
I know. I kind of want to do it just because to prove I can do it, you know, kind of as a thrill. I see writing as a little bit of a, you know, it's puzzling, you know, it's puzzles, it's riddles. It's especially with poetry. It's very much the harder the like if I'm trying to write to a form, the harder the form, the more fun it is almost. It's like a little Jenga thing you got to figure out. So,
yeah.
Do you write for children at all? I mean, you have children. Do you ever write stories for them?
I will. I've told my kids bedtime stories.
Sure.
And I've made notes of them. And I've written out a couple of those as short stories. I intend to do more. It's just a question of having the time to do it. Like right now, there's not enough room on the plate.
For sure. I understand that one. I haven't written very many short stories for kids. I feel like short stories are harder. I actually just took a fiction writing class at UVU, mm-hmm. and she would not allow me to turn in anything except short stories. And it almost killed me. So, you know, she's like, I don't want chapters from books. I want whatever you turn in to feel complete. I want a full arc, beginning to end, no chapters. And so that was really interesting. It really made me stretch as a writer and grow a lot.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So tell me about your writing groups. How did you find your writing groups? And, you know, I mean, sometimes it takes a long time to find a writing group that feels good. What do you enjoy about your writing group?
So there are different meanings to the term writing group, I guess. There are groups of writers, and I'm in a lot of groups. I call them writers groups. Mm-hmm. On Facebook, I'm in a couple on Discord servers as well.
Sure.
But most of them are on Facebook, and it's great that you can go and ask questions and get help and help other people with their questions. And then I also have participated in a bi-weekly group where we get on a video call every other week and share something we've written. And so like you get your turn every other time.
Okay.
And you can submit up to 5,000 words.
Oh, that's a lot, actually. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's why it's every other time.
Yeah.
And so like your homework is to read the other submissions mm-hmm. and make some notes. And then we come together and we're like, all right, we're looking at Don's chapter or whatever that he submitted. And we're going to have, you can share your remarks. Okay, Stephanie, your 2 minutes, go.
Nice.
And then you have like 2 minutes to share what you thought. And that's not like, oh, it made me happy. You know, it's like, well, yeah, it made me happy. I loved it because you said this thing right here, and that really played into this emotion that was very well illustrated. You know, you get specific.
Yeah, exactly. I run two writers groups. One of them is the American Writers Association or American Night Writers Association, ANWA. And, you know, the meeting is very interesting. We usually have like a little lesson at the beginning and it's very casual. People just bring printed manuscripts and whoever brings them, we try to divide the time evenly, usually about 20 minutes per person, and they can use that time for whatever they want. They can read it out loud. They can have one of us read it. You know, we can read it silently and then give remarks. But then I have another group, SCBWI, which is specifically Kidlit, writers. And we read in advance. We add all our comments onto Google Docs and then, we meet and we go over, okay, did you understand the comments that we were giving you? Was there any other feedback that we can help you with? Did you have any questions? And, you know, both groups are great. But it's just a different vibe, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, last semester, one of my teachers, taught us a technique of, like doing, I don't really like doing the on the spot critique or workshop just because I like to think about my feedback more. But but she did a lot of those, and I had to really get used to like how to give a good critique that's not too critical, that's helpful on the spot. And that was a really big learning experience. Because you, in order to give a good critique, you really need to know what the writer's trying to do. And you can't always tell that from what they've given you. So that was interesting. But does your wife read all of your work? And at what point does she become a reader? Is it only when you've polished it through your writer's groups? Or does she, is she the first person to hear your draft?
Well, as I mentioned, our lives are still in a great state of upheaval. We're still trying to move into this house that we've been in for a year and a half. So it's not like she really has time to read whenever she wants.
Yeah.
She read Nightshade Unicorn because I was looking for help and I needed feedback. And she read it before, you know, during the editing phase.
Yeah.
And I didn't hire an editor.
Okay.
I got beta readers and I left the, you know, the grammar and spelling as between me and the computer.
Right.
Because computers are pretty helpful with that these days.
They are.
Unless somebody pointed something out, because there were some typos that other people pointed out, and that was helpful. So yeah, I just kind of took what we could and she listened to a lot of it. So part of my editing process was reading the entire book out loud and recording it, because that was a way to force me to pay attention to how things were flowing.
That's a really great method, and not a lot of people do it. So I'm glad to hear that you do.
Yeah, I turned it into a secret podcast. I did turn it into a podcast via Substack. But it's not publicly available.
Sure.
And it's not the audiobook. It's kind of an audiobook, but it's the entire beta reader version,
right,
of the book, which is, you know, I changed some significant things between the beta reader version and the published version. And like there's no prologue, epilogue. There's no epilogue in the beta reader version. And I forgot what else I was going to say about it.
That's okay.
But yeah.
That's cool.
But you asked if I had some kind of some mission. And at this point, I'm just trying to tell fun stories that other people will enjoy. And maybe sometime I'll decide that I have some mission to take on, but not at this time.
Well, you know, it's a great time to learn the craft. And then when you find your mission, you'll be ready, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably a really great way to be right now. Did you have anything else that you wanted to cover, talk about?
Yeah, I'll share a couple of things. I was thinking as I was moving furniture from our old house into our current shed this morning, because I was, because you had in the email, you'd asked specifically like why we set up a business and, if I were to kind of look at it a different way, I would say at this point, it was not essential to do that. You can publish a book and start selling it. And without, I guess this may depend on your local laws, on your state or even municipality, as far as whether it's required. But as far as Amazon and other distribution channels are concerned, you can independently publish as an individual. You don't need to be a business. And right now we're an LLC, but it's a what's the term? Single member LLC, which means that the income earned by the for the IRS, it's called a disregarded entity.
Okay.
Meaning that the IRS looks at any income as just personal income.
Right.
It's not taxed separately as a business. It gets, well, I guess I'll learn more about that next year when we have to file taxes.
Yeah.
Although we won't have made any profit this year. Unless
it's a labor of love at the beginning.
Grow up overnight.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
It takes time. And this year is going to be a year of investing and losing and getting ready to hopefully win more later.
Yeah.
Like a brand name, you don't necessarily need to have it legally filed. So my brand, Grand Hill Media, it's on paper. It's filed with my state, and it's a DBA,
yeah,
or a
doing business
name of the LLC called Thorn Syndicate Publishing LLC, and that's our legal entity name is Thorn Syndicate Publishing LLC, and then Grand Hill Media is the imprint. But you don't have to go through those technical steps to have to create an imprint,
right?
And you don't have to register copyright. It's encouraged, but it is, if somebody infringes on your your
personal
IP. Intellectual property, it's already illegal just because you created it. It's yours.
Right.
But if you register, it makes it easier to prove, and it gives you extra channels of remediation via court.
Right.
So there's that. And then trademark, I haven't filed any trademark because that's more expensive. If I blow up and books start flying off the shelves, then I will.
Right.
Because, yeah.
Okay. Last question I thought of was, why did you decide to do a pen name? Some people, it's like they have writing that is for different audiences. So they're trying to differentiate, oh, this writing is for this audience. And other people, they just are more private. They like to keep their lives more private. I mean, what's your reason? Because, I mean, this podcast has your name on it. So mm-hmm. why Pendermon?
Just kind of to have some amount of separation and distinction. So a pen name, when I really started thinking about it, because, and it's not really such an issue now as it used to be with Amazon, where if you publish something under the same name, in a different genre, then you're going to ruin the algorithm,
right,
on your behalf. And okay, it's people who maybe you write spicy romance and children's books.
You want to keep them separate.
You don't want those audiences to mix.
Right.
And you want to publish those under separate pen names.
Right.
Maybe one of them is your real name. So like there's Joanna Penn writes nonfiction as Joanna Penn and writes fiction as JF Penn.
Right.
So it's just kind of some kind of distinction.
I want to say JK Rowling has one as well. I can't remember.
JK.
I can't remember what her actual pen name is. She has a pen name.
She does. She does. I don't know it either.
I'm going to Google it.
But I know
it.
That she does have one.
Robert Galbraith. It's the pseudonym. Mm. Yeah. Why J.K. Rowling uses the pseudonym? Because she's got this other thing called the casual vacancy or something like that. Anyway.
Yeah. And I, one time at my local library growing up, I encountered a book by Robert Jordan writing as, and I don't remember the other name. I don't remember the pen name.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know why they did that at the time.
Yeah. Well, I think in J.K. Rowling's case, it's more about the audience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they don't, you know, when you go to her other series, I think it's not quite the same genre.
Yep.
But, cool. Yeah. Well, did you have any other questions for me?
No, we'll talk about your books another day.
Sounds
and
good.
have you back on the podcast. Okay. Do you want to plug something right now? You have a website.
Yes, I
but
do.
There's not really is there anything for sale on the website right now?
Not yet. I am working on adding what is it called? A lead magnet. I have some poetry that I created, like coloring pages for. So that would be fun, like a download for people. And I'm working on getting a newsletter together. But at the moment, I don't have any like call to action for anybody. Just I am trying to up my traffic to my website. So if you want to take a visit, I'd really appreciate it. It's StephanieWritesForKids.com.
Yep. And I'll put StephanieWritesForKids.com in the show notes.
Thanks.
Whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on in your podcast app, it'll be there.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. And stick around after I stop the recording.